You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
So that was really, I won't say a turning point, it was actually a knife in the heart for me. And I decided just to look at what is locally around me and how can I actually have that work-life balance, which was hugely important to me.
Hello, welcome to the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm Evelyn Ehrlich, Chief Research Officer at the DevOps Institute. Our topic today is humanizing change, innovating health and care during digital transformation. Thank you again for listening to us, and thank you for being here. Today, we have with us Hazel Chappelle. I think that is how you say your name, Hazel. Is that correct?
Yes, if that's the way you want it, that's fine. Or Chappell, whatever.
Oh, Chappell. All right. I want to make sure because sometimes I used to be sometimes a little bit offended when people say my last name. So Chappell. All right. Hazel Chappell. Great. Let me give everybody here a little bit of an introduction of what about Hazel. And then we just get right into it. So Hazel is a woman business owner, entrepreneur, and moved to North America years ago. Today, she's actually in Austin, Texas. Now, in a pre-talk, Hazel and I have figured out that she actually spent her Christmas over in Europe, where she doesn't reside anymore, but she has family. And I actually moved and spent my Christmas over in the US. So we probably crossed each other across somewhere on the pond, Hazel, during the time. So she is in the business of healthcare and biomedicine with 20 years and more experience, where she headed up ventures across Europe to include the UK, Sweden, Spain, and Ireland, and has a very diverse network in healthcare and biomedicine across America and globally. Hazel is the CEO and founder of Ishka Health Incorporated, which provides consulting and advisory services around three key areas: continuous change, which of course is something we'll talk a little bit about, cyber basics 101, and she provides executive advisory to C-suite and small businesses. She's also an advisor to Austin's DelMed Health Innovation Catalyst Program, where she reviews and contributes to a broad spectrum of entrepreneurial innovative initiatives. She enjoys speaking on a variety of topics pertinent to healthcare and biomedicine with a key theme of digital security in her delivery. And that's really how I found her when I was looking around for some experts in digital and particular verticals. So Hazel, again, thank you. She's passionate about reducing risk to businesses and keeping businesses safe. She has recently been a guest panel speaker with the European Connected Health Alliance on the topic of data culture around cybersecurity Ireland. I actually was listening to that. It was quite good. Additionally, she was presenting educator to senior Texas data leaders on digital transformation includes leadership. She's also a member of a variety of topics and areas. Let me mention a few. BioNorth Texas, Texas Interoperability Collaborative, oh my goodness, OWASP Austin, and awarded a LASCON badge, England's Digital Leadership Network, Health Informatics Society of Ireland, and a few other things such as the HIMSS Austin chapter. Welcome to our podcast, Hazel.
Thank you, Evelyn. Appreciate you having me here.
Yes, delighted to have you, and love that we both have different accents. So this will be a lot of fun because we can challenge each other. I love Irish, of course. I love the Irish accent. And I used to work at a company where they had a lot of Irish folks. And sometimes we laughed at each other when we said certain words, but I promise I will not laugh at you. And if you promise that you will not laugh at me either. So the first thing, Ishka, am I saying that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
It means water in Irish. I saw that and found that out in your podcast or webinar you did. Tell us more about the name of your company.
Sure. So isca is the Irish word translated from the, well, it's the Irish word translated, meaning water. Now, it is actually spelled differently in the Irish language, U-I-S-C-E, but I did really think about how that would be actually read. So I went with the phonetic spelling of it. And while it means water, which is one of the basic needs of life for health, it's important that it would be clean water. And I just thought it was pertinent to the business that I'm in and how for health and wellness also.
Great idea. I love that. If I need a company name, I will reach out to you. Now, how did you get into and involved in healthcare? Give us a little bit about your journey.
Sure. So from a business point of view, I had been working internationally in technology and also within the financial industry. And at the time I was in London and I had worked in Bloomberg and Reuters. And where I then was currently in Merrill Lynch, my daughter, who was turning 2 at the time, said to me, "Mom, when are you ever going to have breakfast with me?" Because you can imagine within that industry, the hours and the days are long. So that was really, I won't say a turning point, it was actually a knife in the heart for me, being a mom. And I decided just to take that step and look at what is locally around me and what, how can I actually have that work-life balance, which was hugely important to me. So it was really on the back of that I ended up getting the opportunity within what's called a trust in England. So it's one of the large ecosystems. And that's how I fell into healthcare within the world of what's now known as electronic patient record and the beginning of the digital world. So that was over 20 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Being a mother myself, similar challenges, I decided to shift from a technology vendor into becoming an industry analyst and joined Forrester in 2006. Little did I know that I would be gone 70% traveling. And I remember my kids saying the same thing, "Mom, when are you ever gonna be here for my soccer game?" So yes, great change for you. In my case, it wasn't that great, but I know my daughters are successful despite the fact that I've been traveling. Now, as I mentioned, I've been an analyst for quite some time and still function besides being chief research officer at the DevOps Institute. I still do quite a lot of work around researching different topics. One, of course, is the digital transformation. I heard you say, I think it was in that webinar I was watching, that the digital transformation actually started in 2003 in healthcare. I actually was quite blown away by that, but I believe you because you are there. I am not in the vertical. So when you step back and kind of look at the topic of digital transformation, and when we think about the maturity of 0 to 5, like 0, non-existent, and 5, it's like high maturity, where would you say the healthcare in general? I know this is hard because there's so many different aspects, but in general, from a top-down, where in terms of maturity is healthcare today, given you are doing global work? Maybe highlight some of the regions, maybe Americas or North America versus Europe. I think that would be really great for us, our listeners, because some of them might be in the healthcare vertical.
Sure. So I will just also pick up on, you know, that date 2003, and certainly listeners would say, no, actually it started before then, and which I would agree. I joined in 2002 or something like that, and I guess really the movement / momentum had already kickstarted for a variety of reasons. When I was working in the UK, it was about having one patient, one record, due to a number of significant, I suppose, patient safety incidents. And then, of course, 9/11 came along, and one could argue that that certainly was the accelerator of the need to have a more digital footprint, certainly within healthcare. So I guess I'm one of those people that has actually come across, or, you know, worked across the spectrum from the digitalization, and now where we are in terms of digital transformation. So if you take those three angles from it, certainly I was heavily immersed within the going from paper, you know, what was called, certainly in England, the Lloyd George records, in other words, the physical paper files, mm-hmm. right through to digitizing those. I feel, I guess, proud and informed, and being able to take lessons learned from all those areas, really, and the journey that you mentioned from where we are today. Ironically, and I will look ahead from a geographical point of view, so there are pockets of areas, certainly within Europe. I will say in Ireland, within England, and certainly going abroad, that are still actually paper records. And certainly within child health, that is very much the case, and looking at how to integrate the digital health aspect there. It is really, you know, since my arrival here in America, I can see that digital is the way. There are few areas that aren't, and that's just through my, I suppose, linear lens, if I may put it like that. So, and then of course, then you take countries like Australia that are doing actually, you know, massive transformation. Now, I will actually roll back as well to Ireland and say that I sat on one of the government advisory committees about, as an expert within the need to implement or to have change at the forefront of their digital transformation journey. And it was my privilege and honour to sit alongside the then CIO, Richard Corbridge, who, in my opinion, is a global icon for digital transformation. So there are areas that, you know, certainly being involved in HIMSS as well, Health Information Management Society, they support and help accelerate that digital maturity from hospital providers and organisations to achieving certain levels and what that actually brings about, whether it is to have full, what we call digital transformation and interoperability of data, but that can actually mean a different thing subject to what the technology is enabling as well. So I guess really to summarize, Eveline, there is so much more to do. I would say maybe that we're in a 2 to 3. I have no doubt that there would be people who would actually, you know, who are listening into this and go, hey, you know, actually, I think we're a little bit further afield. And that would be within those area of pockets, which yet again is the siloed, siloed locations, which can be the challenge to achieving what the absolute ultimate objectives of digital transformation is about.
So, yes, I'm sure we have some folks who would say one or the other, right, in terms of the maturity, but it is a fairly complex, as you said, topic with many facets and many angles. But I think, if, as you said, 2 to 3, I think that indicates that from your perspective of a practitioner and an expert, that there are still more to go. I did look this morning quickly at the agenda in Davos, as you, I'm sure, are familiar with, the most beautiful place in Switzerland. Hopefully they have some snow and they can ski. Many leaders are visiting each other and with each other to make some challenges or to address some challenges. I did not see a lot around particular verticals, but I will have to research again. For our listeners, take a look at the Davos, and what's happening there is always very good. World Economic Forum has always very, very good content and knowledge and details around digital transformation. All right. Now, I was intrigued by your talk on humanizing change. It was really music to my ears, because we at the DevOps Institute are really focusing on the human aspects of these different modern operating models, such as DevOps, Agile, and so on. And so I have a quote, I hope this is correct. You said, humanizing change is a vital part of any organization's digital transformation. Taking a people-centric approach has time and time again shown to reduce risk, minimize cost, and foster a culture that embraces change not only now, but also in the future. In an environment of rapid and current unprecedented change, we provide the glue that holds people together in challenging times to deliver critical outcomes. So don't overlook your organization's most important asset before conducting digital transformation. This is absolutely beautiful. I do know, and Gartner and others say that the challenges around digital transformation is really the culture. So you're hitting, as we say in Germany, the nail right on its head. Tell us a little bit more about this humanizing change and what you mean by that. Give us a little more color, because again, I'm sure many of the listeners are intrigued by your statement and want to understand more about humanizing change.
Sure. So I may get a little bit passionate here.
That is fine for me.
So go with me on this. So to me, I suppose, as it infers, humanizing, it really is all about the people. I found when I was implementing electronic health records across any ecosystem, it wasn't about the technology. We as humans are individuals. So whether there are commonalities that we have, at the end of the day, we are intrinsically individuals. So when I talk about the people, it can be people in a variety of, I suppose it can be broken down. So it can be actually your customers, it can be the end users, it can be the patients. But when I talk about people as well, I also talk about the mindsets. And from that, then you have to look at behaviors. Now, a great person who I have admiration for is Dr. Bob Wachter. And he was brought in by the NHS in England to actually assess and how to improve the National Health Service in England. And he spoke about people can be the problem, but people can also be the solution. And that clearly, the fact that I'm, recanting his phrase certainly holds resonance with me. In essence, in my opinion and experience, things don't work unless you involve the people. It is, to actually have them engaged, to actually have them motivated, to have them informed, to have them at what I call the core, which is why that we have, user-centric or human-centric approaches, is invalid to actually accelerate or to expedite and achieve on those goals that an organization has actually set out. And speaking with some organizations, certainly within the last 2 years as well, where we're exactly, as I say, in an era of unprecedented change and the futocracy of work, when you take all of that, it is really absolutely important to ensure that people are engaged, that they trust, that they are motivated. And what does that actually look like? Or are we actually looking at humans and extrapolating their true skills that perhaps aren't used within the workplace? Well, that's where we can then look at, costs and the other aspects as well, reducing risk to meet the business needs. And I'll give you another incident, actually. If you take a cybersecurity takedown or an incident, people look at the technology and they start looking at the logs and see why did it happen. And absolutely, and I will take the example, and I'm sure many people across the country where hospital systems have been brought down as well, to focus on the needs of the workforce and ensure that they are well looked after, that they are kept. They're working around the clock to ensure that the system is kept up for patients, for the health of patients, etc. And sometimes that can actually be forgotten, that it's not just about the technology. We need to focus on whether it's the security people, whether it's actually the clinicians. How do we ensure the continuous care of the patients? And how do we support the workforce to help us resolve the issue in hand?
Are you looking to get DevOps certified? Demonstrate your DevOps knowledge and advance your career with a certification from DevOps Institute. Get certified in DevOps Leader, SRE, or DevSecOps, just to name a few. Learn anywhere, anytime. The choice is yours. Choose to get certified through our vast partner network, self-study programs, or our new SkillUp e-learning videos. The exams are developed in collaboration with industry thought leaders and subject matter experts in the DevOps space. Learn more at devopsinstitute.com/certifications.
You know, I just remembered a data point which was brought up by John Clifton, who is the CEO of Gallup. They did a research project, and they have been doing this for quite a while now. I think I want to say maybe 10 years, and I just did a podcast with John Clifton as well. He said that in his 22 findings, and the 22 findings on engagement, only 21% of people are engaged today at their workplace. I found that sad. But at the same time, I do understand why, because there is some reasoning in that report. But again, I find that really, really sad, and particularly in the vertical where you are and what is so essential, particularly after the pandemic and what is in front of us relative to all of that, that engagement from both the folks, or from all the folks, right, has to be addressed. And so really quite a motivational and quite a passionate topic. So I'm glad you have passion, and I'm looking forward to additional conversations on that. Now, as technologists, as you said, yes, humanizing change, and we need to make sure that we engage and make sure we have engaged folks. What do you see in terms of challenge across the humanizing change, specifically in healthcare? I mean, let me just really quickly, a couple of things I experienced recently. My father-in-law had to be in a hospital the last 3 days for a surgery. And that was a very pleasant engagement because the people there were extremely focused on, let's call it, patient experience, where 2 months ago in a different hospital, the experience was completely different. Two different carriers, or I don't know what the actual language is, but two providers, I think is the right word, right? From both hospitals. One was more, I don't know, just very different. I don't want to go into religion, because actually one was a religious provider, which was just a very pleasant experience. What are some challenges you see across humanizing change within healthcare?
So that's a great question, and I can take it from different angles, if I may.
Please do.
From a business point of view, and certainly within what I would call the senior management and leadership suite, and specifically within healthcare, and I say that rather than actually maybe more the biomedicine or life sciences part, is actually the lack of translation. And what do I mean by that? That when you actually take a C-suite, you have chief medical officer, you have chief operating officer, you have chief digital information officer, you have chief, chief CXOs, chief of chiefs, let's say. Yeah. So, but actually breaking that down, you've technology, you've operational, you've, executive, and then, of course, you've actually got the clinicians in hand. And if you take, for example, a topic like cybersecurity, which I will add as well, is not as prevalent and as regular on the agendas as I would like to see, but that's another area of passion for me. But when you take in somebody is presenting that language to the board, it is absolutely my experience, and I'm very confident in saying that, that the information that is communicated is not always clear. And actually, what does it mean by actually communicating this information? And what is the impact to that information being communicated as well? Mm-hmm. And that is where, that whether it is actually, we have a digital transformation program that is starting up. What does this look like? The need to have somebody there translating and understand is absolutely essential. And, you know, I had a great conversation with a leader from the Department of Defense yesterday, and he absolutely agreed with me, because even from his world and going into commercial world as well, it is an area that, as I say, in my opinion, is a key challenge. Also as well that, you know, I mentioned communications as well. My experience is, what does really communication look like? So if you take, I use the analogy of cleanliness between 0 and 5. You have somebody who thinks clean is good at 2 or 3, and then you have the other end of the scale, 5, which is perhaps maybe a little bit OCD. Communication is like that as well, that when somebody thinks they communicate effectively, actually, is it ever measured how it's understood, or is it expected that it is understood? And what does that look like within an organization? I was brought in to spearhead a failing program at one point. And one of the first things that when I looked at it was really, you know, and you spoke earlier about workforce not being engaged. And it was really because they didn't know what the leadership were trying to communicate. They were only told from their direct manager that this is the instruction that needs to be done. But having the overarching vision and objectives was not very clear. In terms of as well, I was, you know, the hairs just went up in my arms when you said, Eveline, about the patient experience. I'm a patient as well, and I can categorically say that irrespective of what provider system, my goodness, it is really, you know, sad actually that how the patient walks in the door and the level of interaction is very, very impersonal. And it really takes a variety of, I suppose, people to understand that everybody is a patient. There are global leaders across the way who have certainly transformed themselves because of a loved one, or exactly to your point that you're able to now tell the story around a family member with a good, and thankfully it was a very good experience. And sometimes that can actually be the catalyst for leaders to really become more empathic and humble, irrespective of the mentoring or coaching or training that they should be getting. And my question is, well, why aren't you like that to begin with? Because we all want to be treated as how we would like to be treated and how we should be treating other people in our everyday lives.
You know, you mentioned two key words which are quite important. Of course, one is communication, and I would add actually collaboration, and the second is empathy. As part of our work and as part of my work at the DevOps Institute for the last 5 years, we have looked at skills. And, you know, of course, we look at technical skills and we look at process skills and framework skills and all those wonderful things. But we also look at human skills. We used to call them soft skills, but as you know, there's nothing soft about soft skills. They're really hard. Human skills are hard. And the top two must have are communication and collaboration, and then empathy. But at the same time, while these are the top must have skills, those are the biggest skill gaps across about 3,000 data points this year, which to me, again, is for five years now, we have these two gaps, or there's others, but these are two key gaps. And I do think your point on leaders and leadership understanding and having the right perspective of what is necessary is something which hopefully we will see from leaders in the future, in this year and further on. We cannot continue this way. That's what I would say.
And I would agree. And if I can just pick you up and drill down a little bit more on that. So empathy to me is around actually also having the emotional intelligence. And that to me is a very inherent skill or trait or personality within somebody. Now, we can all learn and we can read books and understand it. But if I actually take as well, you know, the book, What They Don't Teach You at Harvard Business School, and empathy and emotional intelligence is one of those things. For me as well, that when you take where certain leadership are at a certain age, you know, our behaviors can be a little bit, I suppose, solidified. They can be ingrained on us. So suddenly to have to turn and pivot to become this empathic leader and to actually become more humble is a big challenge and an uphill battle for those leaders who are currently in place. But it is, I totally agree with you, something that has to happen to meet the demands of the way that the challenges that we're encountering today, because our Gen Z and our, you know, millennials are coming in and they sometimes have it. So whether it's through their dyslexia, whether it's through who they are just as people or with their global, you know, experience, they're becoming traveled and more knowledgeable, but actually they become more wise with that knowledge as well, way ahead of our time, that is something that I see is going to change a lot further down the line. And I know that can be perhaps a contesting comment of mine.
And I see that with my daughters as well. As I was said, I was visiting with them in the US over Christmas, and both of them are professionals. One is an architect, the other one is an analyst for, they say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. She's in service management, actually. But both have very different EQs than, mm-hmm. than what I would say I had when I was their age, right? They're 27 and 25. So absolutely, I think the generational challenges there will be, will we who are, I'm a baby boomer, can we learn? Will we be open enough to adopt? I see that at the DevOps Institute as well, we have many young folks who I can learn from and I enjoy working with them because I'm open, but not everybody can be and will learn. And that gets me to another question. And I know this one is a little bit around learning. Continuous learning is something we talk a lot about, and a lot of the HR or learning and development folks are aware and familiar with that. And mm-hmm. continuous learning also is a key principle within DevOps. Is that applied within the healthcare industry?
Oh my goodness, absolutely, yes. And I would actually say certainly within biomedicine and beyond as well. Why? Because it's about staying relevant. There is so much innovation, as we know, that's already there, that's coming down the stream as well. And it's actually about, we need to be prepared for the unexpected. So whether it is actually, you know, here in Austin as well, you've got the Army Futures Command, who are looking at innovative ways of for out in, you know, for the health of the soldiers out in the war field. And that is actually happening within healthcare as well. So even if you take diabetes, how it was treated years ago and where it is now, there is a need for clinical continuous learning. But in terms of business as well, you know, I mentioned earlier about futocracy and workforce and how are we learning and adapting. You know, I was even looking at a link the other day, the 20 to 50 new buzzwords of 2023. And I balk in one way, because in some cases we have to use those words in our daily deliveries or presentations or whatever, because other people will be using them. But at the same time, I'm a big fan of just keeping it plain English. But when we take, you know, Web3 and metaverse and blockchain from a technology point of view, it is important, even for somebody like myself, who is not, well, shall we say, let me put it the inverse. There are the technology experts out there. There are the clinical experts out there. But it is important that I have an understanding of what this is about, mm-hmm. to be able to do the advisory and consulting as well, you know, within the area of business that I'm in. So continuous learning as well, then, from an individual point of view, is always about being self-curious. You know, I have actually created this diagram, and this is purely from my experience of getting unexpectedly involved in cybersecurity through an absolutely awesome leader, Charles Ornger. And it was actually the exposure to cybersecurity that helped to, I suppose, develop my curiosity, and in turn that motivated me. So when I look at that, and then the motivation continues my curiosity to keep going, and it becomes cyclical. So there, I've approached your questions from different aspects, but inherently, you know, I would always encourage somebody to learn continuously. And I guess really, you know, an admiration of mine is when people talk about retiring, or they don't retire, or shall we say they step back from their current job at a certain age. So nobody, I know lots of people who never retire. Continuous learning for them is just, you know, it's fantastic to actually see it in the aging, for the health of the mind, for actually to my point in staying relevant. So whether it's technology, I've had the opportunity to be involved in an absolutely phenomenal effort here within North Austin. And it's about, you know, supporting the age and the health and prevention of as well. So those are different facets from a health point of view. And then also as well, as I say, innovation is coming down the line. So whether it is something from cell and gene therapy right through to technologies, I will go back to why I'm talking about continuous change. It's not going to stop.
Yeah. So you said curiosity and excitement. We do know and read about, you know, quiet quitting and burnout and all of that. And I don't want to belittle it because it's existing. But as we have a lot of different listeners, from the digital natives to Gen Zs to baby boomers to maybe some folks who are, as you said, stepping back. I love that, because I don't really like the word retirement. I'll never retire. I'll just step back. But given that, there is also lots of curiosity. And you said you fell into the cybersecurity because you were curious. What would you advise some of our listeners to think, do, or take on to enter the healthcare industry? Because the healthcare industry vertical, not just in the US, not just in Europe, across the globe, is essential for all of us. Because as you said, we need healthy people. We need a healthy planet, but without healthy people, we can't have a healthy planet. So a couple words for some on advice. What should people think about when they when they want to enter the healthcare industry?
So if I may ask you a question, Eveline, so that I can answer your question more articulately, do you mean from a technology point of view or actually from the care aspect?
Both, actually. Technology, of course, you know, that's important. Mm-hmm. Like you said, cybersecurity and whatever else is in there. So maybe we go there first. And then from the other perspective, what type of people, what do I need to think about? What skills should I have? And how should I get into what should I learn? How should I prepare?
So I guess contrary to what you might think, I'm a great believer. I'm being cynical about myself there. I'm a great believer in talking to people and seeking out the right people who can give their point of view. And you know, I have a daughter who's looking now to what area of her career is she going to go in. One can have an inherent instinct of maybe what good could look like or what their skill set could be, you know, about. But it's also in actually talking to people and understanding, or sometimes unexpectedly, it's having that experience that can really just cement where their area is about. Having the experience, you know, this is why there are interns out there, or internships, should I say, as well, to give that experience. Volunteer sometimes, you know, so whether it's first aid or whether it is actually just, you know, what can I do? There was a point in my career where I wasn't sure, did I actually want to go into catering? So I just literally took I took a bold approach and rang up the top hotels in Dublin and asked, could I go and join in their kitchens for a day? Oh, and I was lucky that I was actually able to join the executive chef in one of Dublin's top hotel. And to this day, if somebody gave me it to me as a present, it is the most invaluable, because I had the experience, the understanding to really make that decision. So now cooking's my passion rather than actually my way of living. But so that's what I would say. Just reach out to people. Don't be afraid to, you know, the right people will want to help and actually support the younger people coming about, or whether it is actually just a complete change of career and industry in some capacities. Because now, a lot of days I see, for example, when I take organizations and look at their cyber posture, you know, I'm 101, shall we say, it is actually industry agnostic. It is using those commonalities and then actually how can you match and transplant. And certainly my experience is there will be one person who you will always remember their words and their sayings, and maybe, you know, one day become their mentor as well.
Beautiful. All right. I have one more question for you, completely different. You already mentioned something you're doing for fun, which is cooking, but what else do you do for fun, Hazel?
Oh, wow. Now I have a big smile on my face. So it can be anything from have a day out with my daughter, because we literally, and this is a very Irish saying, when we're together having fun, we can be two tittering twits. To me, laughter is absolutely, is, you know, raises the endorphins. And I am so, so blessed that I get that with my daughter so, so much. When I have fun and I kind of need to, you know, clear a few cobwebs, I love doing tennis. So to me, sport in any capacity, even if you're not sporty, is good for the mind and the soul. It can be very relaxing as well. I'm a little bit of a social butterfly, and it goes back to I am very blessed to have good people around me that yet again, and I'm unexpectedly finding myself saying that laughter, fun, humor is how I expel and in turn have fun and also remaining curious.
If you ever get close to Stuttgart, Germany, please ring me up. I'd love to hang out with you. Fantastic. Oh. I invite you to come and we'll have fun and laugh together. We have been talking to Hazel Chappell, global thought leader within the healthcare industry. Hazel, thank you so much for joining me today on Humans of DevOps. And for our listeners, Humans of DevOps podcast is produced by DevOps Institute. Our audio production team includes Julia Papp and Brendan Lay. I am Humans of DevOps podcast executive producer, Evelyn Ehrlich. If you would like to join us on a podcast, please contact us at humansofdevopspodcast@devopsinstitute.com. I'm Evelyn Ehrlich. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.